8:35, House Committee on Trade and Economic Development. Trade and Economic Development will come to order. And concerning the House Bill 2234, we are going to have a work session, but the amendment is not ready, so we are going to look at the Wednesday on the electronic commerce bill. And so we'll do that. And I'd like to open a work session concerning the adopting the committee bill. Why don't you explain what we are adopting?
Mr. Chairman, you have six legislative drafts for consideration. I'll just read the relating clause and the catch line from each of them. Legislative draft 870. I should mention each of the members has a set. The one that's in bold you do not have. I have a copy of that. That came late Friday, so we did not get it into this set that's been copied for you. Legislative Draft 871 relating to international goodwill trade ambassadors allows the governor to appoint international goodwill trade ambassadors. Legislative Draft 1575 is a joint resolution encouraging the sending of a joint legislative international trade mission to China, Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. Legislative Draft 1848 is a joint resolution proposing amendment to the Oregon Constitution relating to distribution of net proceeds of lottery for natural disaster relief in Oregon. Legislative Draft 3032 is the one I have a copy of here if you want to see it. Relating to rail projects, authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds for rail improvement projects. Legislative Draft 3050, relating to Legislative Committee on Trade and Economic Development, eliminates the appointment by the President of the Senate of co-chairpersons of Legislative Committee on Trade and Economic Development. Legislative Draft 3441, relating to livestock quarantine facilities, authorizes State Department of Agriculture to issue grants to assist persons in constructing and operating livestock quarantine facilities designed primarily to qualify disease-free livestock for export.
All right. Any discussions and questions on this draft?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Could the good administrator please tell us which ones of these have financial impacts?
We don't have the fiscal impacts have not been done on these, of course, but the relating to rails projects, the first one, I don't think has has a fiscal impact.
No.
The second one, I believe, I'm not sure if that one has a fiscal impact. Depending on the language in it, in the past when these things have done, sometimes they say that members of these missions shall pay their own way, and sometimes there's other funds that they're allowed to spend. For example, if legislators go, they can spend some of their discretionary funds on the transmission.
There's no impact on that one.
On Legislative Draft 1848.
Okay, excuse me. 1575 would have a dollar of fiscal.
Personal expenses, not from the state. 1575 you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This is the one I had talked about some of the members making a trip to Asia with their own expenses. There's no... At this bill, there is no fiscal impact at all.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, but I don't see that anywhere in here.
So there is no fiscal impact any mentioned in here at all.
But I'm just wondering, shouldn't this resolution mention that? That it's at the expense of the members.
Okay, we can draft later, and when it comes to our committee later.
It would be okay. Okay,
yes,
thank you.
We can fully discuss at the time. All right.
Third one down, legislative draft 1848, would have fiscal impact. There's an allocation that would...
1%.
Yeah, we go 1% of the state lottery would go for a natural disaster relief fund.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
On 1848, you said it's 1%?
Yes.
Where do we find that?
Can you find the 1%?
Oh, on the last page,
last
6?
15, yeah.
And,
could that also relate to terrorism?
What? I didn't catch it.
It says natural disaster relief, and I'm asking, could those dollars be used for terrorism?
It could be, and we can discuss that fully, either natural and a human disaster. I'm sure that will include the terrorism also.
And, Mr. Chair, may I ask, does that include firefighting?
And when we discuss that, I'm sure if committee members approve, we can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Legislative draft 3032 relating to rail projects. Yes, it would authorize the issuance of lottery bonds for rail improvement projects, so that has a fiscal impact.
And here, may I ask what that amount is?
That's the one we don't have a copy of.
We have the copy?
Here's the copy, and that amount is blank.
I want to have a read.
Can be filled in by us
later. The amount is blank.
And would you like me to continue then?
Let's resolve to that one first.
Thank you.
All right, next.
Legislative draft 3050 relating to the Joint Committee on Trade and Economic Development. I don't believe that has a fiscal impact. That has to do with how the committee within the legislature is organized. And legislative draft 3441 has a fiscal impact. The way it's written right now, it authorizes an $8 million general fund allocation to livestock quarantine facility development. That is on the last page of that one also.
Okay. How this came up, this 3441, is when we went to the Tadals, did we get some ideas from there?
They mentioned it while we were there. Mostly the idea came from a discussion of agricultural exports early in the session, and they're mentioning that the export of livestock looked like a viable activity until the mad cow disease outbreak in Canada, and then it was stopped, and this they were talking about a quarantine facility as being the key for having that export of live animals start again, and that's the origin of the proposed legislation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Why do we have to use general fund monies? Can't we just use economic development monies?
Well, that can be talked. That can be amended in any fashion.
Okay.
Having been a part of that Korean livestock program, I felt that was the best. That was what economic dollars were to be used for.
This is adopting the bill, and when it comes in, it could amend the way we want it. And so just let's adopt it, and we will have a full discussion on this issue concerning the revenue impact, economic development, and how good it is. It might go, it might not. So let's have a full discussion after we adopt this bill. This is just adopting it. And then let's go ahead after that, and we will have a full discussion on this issue. And I plan to move aggressively from now on, because the Senate will shut down sometime April, later part. So if we linger on too much, we might not be able to pass the bills we want to. So from now on, with your cooperation, we shall be able to get it done. Okay, with that, do I have a motion to adopt this bill, adopt this draft?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt this package of bills in its entirety as committee bills.
All right, and Vice Chair Bruant moved to adopt as a package that the LC 871, LC 1575, LC 1848, LC 3032, LC 3050, LC 3441, Is any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Out of respect to the chair and this committee, I'm going to vote to accept this as a committee, but I would like to go on the record saying I don't support LC 3032 or LC 3441 as shown.
So noted. Right?
Thank you.
All right. Then, if there is no objection other than that,
I'm going to vote for the motion as long as I'm assured, as you assured Representative Nelson, that we'll have opportunity to amend 3032 and 3441.
Yes, of course.
And I am in full support.
Okay. It is up to our committee. When it comes to a bill to our committee, we will have a full discussion. At the time, you can decide either one way or another. So this is just the beginning. And with that, this is adopted. All right, and I'm going to close the work session, and we'll open the information meeting. Okay, I'd like to call at this time Ron Fox, and would you like to come yourself or anyone else you'd like to bring? All right. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Ron Fox. I'm the manager of the Business Development Division for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. And I have with me today Victoria Pruitt, who is our manager of business development within the department, and also Dave Dahleen, who is our senior business loan officer. We would like to share with you some information today on the department's business finance options that we make available to small businesses throughout Oregon. Again, this is one of many tools that we utilize to help small businesses in Oregon both get started as a business and to grow and be successful. The business finance programs, as Victoria and Dave will go through the presentation with you, have been in existence for quite some time, but they are an essential tool that the department and the state uses to help businesses grow and expand in Oregon again, create the economy that all of us wish to have for our state. So with that brief introduction, I will be here to answer any questions that you may have as they relate, but I'll at this time like to turn it over to Victoria and Dave and let them make the formal presentation to this time. Thank you.
Great.
Good morning, Chairman Lynn, committee members. For the record, my name is Victoria Pruitt. I'm the Market Development Manager with OECDD, and I'd like to also introduce Dave Dahleen. In starting this morning, we wanted to cover off, and you should have a packet in front of you, and I'm going to go through essentially high points. I won't be hitting on every point here. There's a lot of information. We tried to touch on what Chairman Lynn had asked for and also Vice Chair Bruin when we were here before you on House Bill 2175. So I think that we've captured responses to those requests, and we'll go through it fairly quickly, and then if you have questions, we'll go from there. Business finance is basically geared towards leveraging the private sector and leveraging banks and other entities that are out there. We're a department that's of five people, so the more bodies that we can leverage across the state, the better. We're also here to help, as Ron had said, here to help companies in creating and retaining jobs and to build and expand their businesses. Many of our programs work through banks. We found that working with the banking community, we can essentially help leverage their dollars and bring a piece to the pie and not be competing with them directly. Another note is that the business finance programs that we're going to go through today, through the past, have pretty much been set and formatted by legislation. So recommendations have been made by the department, but most of the things we're tasked with have come through the past legislative sessions. Through the programs, we have loan programs, we have guarantee and loan loss reserve programs, and then we have bonds. And the bonds are essentially the oldest, which has been around since the mid-70s. Out of the loan programs, we have the Business Development Fund, the Oregon Business Development Fund, which was formed in 1983, the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund. Under guarantees and loss reserve programs, there's the Credit Enhancement Fund, Oregon Capital Access, which is actually a loan loss reserve program where we contribute to a loan loss reserve account at banks that are participating. And then under bonds, we have the old standard industrial development bonds, and then we've come up with a new version, which is an express bond that we're trying to launch and hopefully have our first one here in the next month or so. Under the Business Development Fund, it is a statewide program. It is gap financing. Essentially, if I'm a business and I come to a bank looking for financing, and let's say I have $50,000 and the bank is willing to put up $100,000, we would do the other $50,000. So we're helping to bridge where the bank doesn't feel that they can go. It's open to manufacturing, processing, and high technology and tourism. Ineligibles fall into the retail and food service group, and also refinancing of anything that may be an existing debt. Maximum amount covered currently is $500,000. Under statute, we're authorized to go up to $1 million. Currently, we hold it at $500,000. We're looking at potentially raising that to $750,000 because we've seen some increase as far as loan levels through the years. Average loan currently is $275,000. One of the things we had been asked before was what were the rates on the programs. The rate for this program in particular is 1% more than comparable treasury. So as of last week, it was about 5.28%. There are two versions to the OBDF. There's the regular account and a targeted development account. The targeted development account is geared towards distressed areas, so it has a better APR. It has a different senior and co-senior level. The investment on it is $20,000 per job versus $30,000, which is required under the regular program. And the term on it is shorter, being 5 years versus 10. There's also a first source hiring agreement that's required as part of this program, and that's a hiring agreement with local providers for job training. So that's also part of the requirement.
Victoria?
Yes.
As you go on, could you give us what's the total amount of the fund in there? And how much do you use? What's the current balance? So at least
okay.
We get some ideas. So.
We'll get to capitalization towards the end of the presentation.
Okay.
If that's okay?
That's okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
So for performance, the way I've structured the handout is some information on each program and then some performance. And the performance is program to date. So from 1983 through 2004 for OBDF, 338 loans have been done and $46 million have been loaned to Oregon companies. And that's been leveraged by approximately $176 million in private and other investment. So the borrower and the banks ended up contributing that other piece of the leveraged dollars. The companies have projected over 6,000 jobs to be created and retained out of that. And with recent financials, we've actually come in with earned income of $10 million. So the OBDF fund actually is a solid performer, and off of the earnings and stuff for that fund, we're able to support a couple of the other funds as well, and we'll get into that. Actual job creation to date has been 3,235 and then another 1,244 that were actually retained. Over half are into rural Oregon and a good third are into distressed areas. Before I move on to EDLF, I had made some notes, and this does speak to some of the performance factors that Chairman Lynn just asked. Current loss provision on this program is about 4.8%, which is actually very, very reasonable. The return on investment is at 2.7%. And at this point, all the costs for administration and loan losses are paid through any fees and earnings. And the other two programs that are supported through OBDF are the EDLF program, which I'm going to speak about, and the CAP program. EDLF was started in 1991. The legislature at that point was acting in response to a loss of jobs in the timber industry. And they were looking at how to support entrepreneurs, in particular in timber-dependent communities, which tended to be a lot of rural or distressed areas at that point in time. It started with approximately $1.6 million in lottery funds with a second infusion of $1 million. In 93-95. The loans are all made to startup companies. The maximum term is 5 years. The initial loans are up to $25,000, and you can have a follow-on loan of $15,000. And that is a separate application. They have to apply and be approved again. Fixed rate on this is 2% over prime. It cannot be more than 18% annual percentage rate. One thing that's also required for this, because many of these people are just starting out, is that they do have to go through the SBDCs or another partner that's a partner with the department to get an approved business plan and to get technical assistance in doing the application. As far as performance on ELF, 239 loans have been funded to date, approximate value of $3.3 million. 276 projected jobs have been retained and created, and you'll notice that the job count is very similar to the loan amount, which shows you that you have single entrepreneurs or essentially two or three employees perhaps to a business. Two-thirds are in rural areas. Over half or close to half are in distressed areas. This is one of our best programs for targeting and supporting women and minorities. So over a third of these have been to women-owned businesses. And over 40% are made for working capital. Currently, the losses on this program, the loss reserve is about 19%. It is a riskier portfolio. That's been anticipated from day one. These are startup companies, so they're very small levels. And one of the things that also is required is that 20% collateral is required by the people. So there is an investment. You know, the borrowers are vested, but there still is a higher loss rate, and so we have a higher APR. And the portfolio also reflects it. Return on investment is at a negative 10% at this point. So, but we have been able to fund it out of profitability on the OBDF fund. Next program is Oregon Credit Enhancement. This is a guarantee program. It was established in 1994 as a reserve fund with the authority for the OECD to pledge up to $75 million in repayment on loan guarantees. Currently, I think we're at about about $22 million in that. And what we do is we provide guarantees to banks to increase the capital availability and create jobs. These are for traded sector companies. All companies in distressed areas are eligible, but there are some limitations on other companies. The maximum is for 15 years or the useful life of the equity and the goods that are being loaned against. So that's up to $500,000. One of the things with CEF is that it's very quick. The banks use their own documents. They're the ones managing it. It's their application form. It takes approximately 10 to 11 days. And there are some variations within the program, and there's an additional handout which goes into the application process that was given to all of you, and it goes into the different variations within the program. So, for example, Evergreen Entrance and Evergreen Plus are geared towards working capital. So, and that's all described in the materials that have been handed out to you. As far as performance on CEF, 51 banks are currently enrolled. We've done 276 guarantees from the inception and approximately $72 million in value. The smallest loan is about $15,000. The largest has been $1.85 million, with the average being $260,000. The majority of these, 80%, have been done for working capital. Half of the loans are in rural areas, and a third have been in distressed areas of Oregon. Current claims, as far as claims by the banks, have come to about 1.5% to date, which is more than reasonable. The legislature initially invested $7.5 million, and assets are currently at $10.4 million. Jobs for this segment, as far as performance, are at 1,865. Current loan loss provision is at 5.4%, and return on investment is just under a negative 1%. And in looking at the portfolio, there actually was a change in accounting about 3 years ago. And since that point, they've been running at an ROI that's just under a negative 1. And they've just essentially allotted more into their loan loss reserves. So I think over time that will end up flushing itself out. The next program is Capital Access. Participating banks set the loan terms and assess the risk. Essentially, this is a loan loss reserve. and we are essentially matching a fee that the borrower pays. The borrower pays anywhere from 3% to 7%, and OECDD matches that. In certain cases, we double match if it's a distressed area, and currently we're also trying to see if we can get banks that aren't currently enrolled to enroll, and so we're double matching for any bank that's a new participant. It's considered to be non-bureaucratic and extremely flexible. As I said, the banks use their own documents. They're the ones assessing the risk. It takes 3 or 4 days to process it and get it through. We're essentially signing a check and forwarding it. The benefits occur primarily in Oregon, and it's primarily it can fit for most any business, profit or nonprofit. There are a few exceptions. It can't be for construction or purchase of residential housing, purchase of real property, and can't be used for refinancing of existing loans. I've seen them as high as $1 million and as low as $10,000. So if you hear that the bank is financing a beauty shop for $300, that's a $300 or 3% loan contribution to a loss reserve account, not that we're loaning $300. So, as far as performance on capital access, it was started in 1991, as I said earlier. It increases the availability of loans from banks to small business. 2,137 total loans have been approved to date with an average value of $48,000. The total cap investment from the state's perspective is $3.66 million. The leverage dollars against that, coming from banks and coming from individual borrowers, is $103 million, which is a 28-to-1 leverage. 40% of these are rural, and 14% are distressed. 11% are minority and or women-owned businesses. On industrial development bonds, I'm going to move through this and express bonds fairly quickly. This is our oldest program and one of the standards. It was started back in 1976. Currently, to date, there are approximately 17,000 jobs that are attributed to it. For this year, we've actually done two bonds totaling $3.88 million. On average, the department usually does anywhere from 5 to 6 bonds. Because of the interest rates being as low as they are, it's not as appealing to businesses, but as the rates start to climb, I'm sure that we'll start to do more. Industrial development bonds are primarily for manufacturing, solid waste, and nonprofits. These are companies that are usually, I won't say well-heeled, but they're, you know, they're structured fine. They're looking at expansion. So it's not someone who is essentially in need of credit or needs gap financing. These are conduit bonds. The state issues them, but we don't guarantee them for repayment, and all the costs are paid for in participation fees to use the bond structure. And I'm going to move on. There's an application page, which essentially goes through the process. There's an application fee and a closing fee. Resolution from the county is still currently required. This is part of House Bill 2175, which we will be amending and talking with the Association of Counties in regard to. But it does add a step to the process, and we had some complaints from counties. We do want to keep them in the process if they feel that it takes them out. So we'll be working with them as to whether that's a notice or if we continue to keep them as part of the approval process. It does add a step in time and does create some complexity at the county level. The Finance Committee does give initial approval, and then the State Treasurer issues the final bonds. The Express Bond Program is intended to stimulate growth in the lower bond level area, which would be $500,000 to the $3 million area rather than up to $10 million. And we've tried to streamline that. We've actually also worked and set one certain bond council, and they've set a fee which will be less than $10,000, so then the fees don't become exorbitant or become above what the bond level would be feasible. It can be eligible for subordinated financing from the Oregon Business Development Fund. The one project that we currently have that we're anticipating putting through would be partnered with an OBDF loan. Preston Gates is the bond counsel. It was contracted with, and as I said, they were looking at keeping their fees below $10,000. It's my understanding in the past some IDRBs that it could run as high as $60,000. The lender does determine the rate on the express bond. I believe it takes anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks to complete the process. With that, we've covered off detail on the programs, and we're going to go into capitalization. If there's any questions in regard to program detail at this point, I'd like to open that up.
Any question? Representative Dallum?
Yes, you talked about repeatedly banks. Could I interpret that to mean financial institutions when you're trying to get others to participate in the program?
Yes, the majority are banks. Do we have any credit unions, Dave, on the list at this point?
There are two credit unions, I believe, are signed up to use the program.
Thank you.
Chairman Lynn and Representative Dallum, in follow-up, we also do work on OBDF with the regional groups and certain OE, development associations that have lending capabilities.
Okay. Okay, and how many loan programs are together? I'm kind of lost.
Chairman Lynn and committee, there are two loan programs, Oregon Business Development Loan Fund and the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund,
but each
that are revolving loan funds.
Okay. And do we have any records out of this loan, even though it's a job gaining and a distressed area,
mm-hmm.
but did we lose any money? At certain programs.
On certain programs?
Yes.
EDLF would be the one where we have a higher risk portfolio where there have been funds. It's higher risk. I wouldn't say that we've, well, return on investment is a negative 10%. And currently loan loss reserves are at 19%. I've seen portfolios at 40%. So at this point, it's not a very large portfolio. It is intended for startups, which is a riskier segment. I think that was fully understood and intended. It is supported by interest and earnings off of the OBDF at this point, so it's not eating into the capitalization funds from the OBDF fund.
Okay. Do you have any the grant? This is all loan program or loan guarantee. Do you have any grants at all?
No.
No grant at all.
No.
Okay. The interest is all different according to the loan program. Which is the highest? Which is the lowest?
Chairman Lynn and the committee. The highest is EDLF. With an interest rate of prime plus 2, not to go over 18%, but that is the highest.
Right.
And it's the riskiest portfolio.
Because of the risk involved.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the lowest?
Representative Lynn in the committee would be the industrial development bonds, yes?
The bond, right?
Yes.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Bruin.
Can I ask, with the rates that you have tied to prime, you say they're fixed. Are they truly fixed or are they floating, i.e. when prime rises, does the rate also rise?
Chairman Lim, Vice Chairman Bruin, and the committee, they are fixed.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Would that be, when you're using prime as your instrument, when you have a long-term loan, would that be part of the reason that some of the return on investment and the loan loss is not as high? I would think that you are artificially holding your return on investment low when you're tying it, especially now in a rising interest rate
mm-hmm.
environment.
Chairman Lamb, Vice Chairman Grimm, and the committee. I believe that because of past practices, that's why it's been tied to prime and is fixed. And also that gives a benefit to the borrower, and that's where the main focus is. I don't know of any consideration for tying it to any other parameter.
Chairman Lynn, Vice Chairman, I might add that...
Would you please identify your name first? Thank you.
Certainly. My name is Dave Dahlin, D-A-H-L-I-N. I might add that it's the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund that's tied to prime, and those have a maximum term of 5 years. So they're relatively short term.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do you have any next presenter?
Actually, I was going to finish running through the information that's here, and that's in regard to capitalization. Chairman Lim had asked for information in regard to how the funds were capitalized for the last 10 to 15 years when we were here before. The first one is page 20 for OBDF, and I may be off on page number here. It was originally capitalized with general fund and ADA federal funds for $2,667,000 and lottery funds of $8,270,000. Additional funds that came from the URB was another $500,000, and then most recently, and this was June of 2004, $6.5 million were allocated by the OECD Commission to recapitalize the fund. And current balance at this point in time is about $8.5 million that's available to loan. That will also support CAP and EDLF.
This is the self-revolving fund, or do you need more funds sometime in the future?
Chairman Lim and the committee, at this point it is a revolving fund, and you'll notice that the Treasury interest and principal payments have been $44 million over the history of the program. It's revolved approximately four times. So at this point, it's been pretty much paying for itself and supporting other programs. We anticipate that the infusion of the 6.5 will carry the fund and the other funds that it supports for approximately the next two biennium.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions? Then we'll go on to EDLF. EDLF, again, is our riskier portfolio fund, and if you'll remember, it was established in regard to response for losses of jobs in the timber industry. The initial capitalization was $590,000 and $100,000 from OBDF fund, and then $1 million was transferred from CEF in approximately, I believe it was the 93-95 session. Interest, Treasury interest, principal repayments, and interest earned were $3.2 million. And at this point, as far as projections, we look at funding it with approximately $100,000, probably at the halfway through 2005.
Representative Riley.
Thank you. On this EDLF, what's the success rate of the companies that you've lent this money to in the past?
Chairman Lim, Representative Riley, and the committee, I'm actually going to let Dave address that since he's at the loan level and deals with many of them.
Dave Dowling again. Representative Lim, Representative Riley. The success rate has been relatively high. As Victoria noted a few minutes ago, the losses have been in the 10% range.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a number of companies that have been very successful in terms of employing one to two people, and some companies have employed many more people than that. But it is a startup loan program.
Right.
Maximum loans starting out as $25,000 will virtually make loans to any kind of business that comes in, as long as they haven't been in business more than 2 years or haven't sold more than $100,000 of product during the last year that before they've applied for the loan.
Thank you.
Chairman Lim, Representative Riley, and committee, if I can offer a couple examples of recent EDLFs. One was in Klamath County and was to essentially a tax store where they were expanding their line and needed working capital to buy inventory. A second one was for a quilting setup where she needed to purchase equipment and set up shop, and that was in Merrill. So an approximate average investment was $20,000 to
$25,000. Chairman Lim, members of the committee, the legislature, I think when they established the Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund, intended it, and we have utilized it, to be a lending option that for a business that otherwise could not get credit at a bank. So we are operating this loan as the, if you will, lending option of choice before a commercial bank would step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the figures that Victoria and Dave have alluded to are indicative of the early stage operations, early stage risks, but many of the companies that have been recipients of our Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund and have been successful have gone on to get the next round of their capitalization through a conventional banking institution. But obviously there are ones that just because of their business proposition just don't survive. So it's an early stage. They've mentioned it's limited to companies that have been in operation less than 24 months and have a relatively, in today's marketplace, $100,000 gross receipts is a relatively small business if you divide that over a 12-month period of time.
Sure.
Follow up.
Thank you. I understand that this was a high-risk area, and I think you've done an extremely good job of helping these companies come along, and it's a very good rate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have a few more to run through for capitalization. On CEF fund, the initial capitalization was $8.7 million. There have been funds transferred to EDLF of $1 million and another smaller transfer of $168,000. Interest and then guarantee premiums, because this is not a loan fund, it is a guarantee program, are at approximately $4.5 million. And on the CAP fund, which is also a loan loss or guarantee program of sorts, was funded initially with $2.1 million of lottery funds and a transfer from OBDF in the amount of $1.9 million. We do receive interest and fees off of the loan loss reserve accounts, and we also receive treasury interest off of the funds that are waiting to be dispersed. The reserve on balance at banks at this point in time, as of the end of January, was $2.3 million. Projected funding will be approximately $400,000 for the next per biennium. One of the things I would like to cover off is the Finance Committee and then our team that's based at OECDD. The committee is designated by the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission. They review and approve and have authority over OBDF funds and loans that are above $50,000 up to $500,000. They also review industrial revenue bonds, express bonds, the revolving loan fund for the port, as well as SIP projects. This is a volunteer board of 5 members. They've actually been very stable, I believe, for 10 years or more. And the chairman is Bill Humphreys from Citizens Bank in Corvallis.
Okay. Could you expand a little bit on the port revolving funds, loan funds?
Chairman Lynn and the committee, I'm actually going to let Dave respond because I've had very little experience with it.
Okay.
Chairman Lim, the Port Revolving Loan Fund is a loan program set up many years ago that loans money directly from the state of Oregon to the ports around the state.
Isn't it managed by community development?
Right, and it's not managed by business finance, it's managed by the community development section of the department.
How much do we have?
Chairman Lim and the committee, we can get that information for you.
Could you?
Yes. It's managed by another division within OECD, so we will get that information.
Yes, I'd like to find out where this money has been used and for what good, and I'd like to have some input on it.
Okay. With that, I just wanted to wrap up with a note on the team. We do have 5 very experienced members. The team consists of a finance manager, 4 loan officers, and an administrative assistant. Those 4 loan officers do everything from soup to nuts. And they are also assigned regionally, and so they are out talking with banks and also working with the business development officers to help support Oregon businesses. We are also in the process of currently reviewing best practices and programs and structuring the business finance team and its products for future business finance and capitalization needs. And that concludes our presentation, unless there are more questions.
Okay. Let's go to the far back. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick question. On the Finance Committee, how are those members chosen?
Chairman Lynn, Representative Buckley, I believe that they're assigned by the committee and by the commission, and I'm going to let Dave respond.
Chairman Lynn, Representative Buckley, in the past, the staff has developed a list of nominees and presented those to the commission, and the commission has chosen from that list. As Victoria said earlier, the Finance Committee currently is made of three bankers and two private business people, and I think the most recent appointment to the committee was 3 to 4 years ago. The rest of the committee members have been on the committee for approximately 10 years.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In general, how are these programs being marketed? I realize the different program creates a different marketing need, but in general, how are these being marketed?
Chairman Lamb, Vice Chairman Green, and the committee. There's been a fairly large effort to market and talk with banks as far as producing materials and information and getting it out to the public. That has not been done at the great scale that it probably should be to let people know. We are online, and all information and application forms are available through the Internet. So that is there, but we haven't done a real good job in getting the word out. A few years ago, we were much stronger at that, but with resources and stuff, it's become more limited.
Chairman and members of the committee, I guess I would also say that the department does work directly with all of the small business development centers, so we regularly meet with the small business centers to review the current portfolio of loan programs the department has available. They represent an early point of contact for many businesses. As Victoria mentioned, we meet regularly with the Oregon Bankers Association and the individual banks that are members or participants in our program. And our business development officers, we have 12 business development officers who are assigned geographic regions of the state who work directly with local businesses, with local economic development organizations. So that's the primary method by which we outreach to the businesses and to the banking institutions, whether that be commercial banks, local economic development organizations that have revolving loan fund programs in various entities around the state.
Yeah. Chairman Lim and Vice Chairman Brennan and the committee, one of the things I would like to add is that oftentimes in the history, the OECDB has focused on the borrowers and the story of the borrower versus focusing on the agency. And so in the past, a lot of publicity has been given to the people who have benefited, and oftentimes they don't even realize that the state is involved. So going forward, we're hoping to get some publicity that will help support the department and get some more notoriety and exposure for the programs.
I would just, can I follow up on that,
yes.
Mr. Chair? I appreciate the marketing efforts, and I think you probably all agree that we could always do more. And the only reason I say that is not to be pointed, but I spent 10 years in commercial banking and the last 2 years in small to medium-sized business, and it hasn't been a great, the access to information, it's always there if you reach out for it. Mm-hmm. It's always online. But that, I think, especially with the small businesses, we need to find ways to once again, constrained by marketing dollars, but to be more creative in how we deliver that, because I think these are outstanding programs. We just have to make sure that qualifying Oregon businesses are where they're even out there.
Great. Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, Victoria, what is your definition of a distressed area?
I'm actually, excuse me,
Chairman Lim, Representative Nelson. The legislature has given us directions to focus on distressed communities, and that's a economic analysis that focuses on sustained unemployment and below state average per capita income. And it generally focuses on rural communities, but there are a couple of urban neighborhoods in the Portland area that fit that distress, inner northeast Portland and the Lentz neighborhood in Portland. So it's a calculation based on the economic evaluation of unemployment and the level of per capita earnings in that geographic location.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Could we please get the list of those distressed areas and from the worst to the least worst, if you don't mind?
Yeah, Chairman Lim, Representative Ness, happy to do that. We have that both in the on a map version, which we'll provide to you, but we also have it listed by the geographic locations.
Both of those would be great. And last question, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Is it possible to know in this last biennium what firms got funding from these sources? In what location, Victoria?
Chairman Lynn, Representative Nelson, and the committee. Yes, it is. If you would like a list, we have lists of completed projects for all programs.
With the amount of money that was borrowed?
Yes, I'm wondering about any kind of disclosure issues. I don't think there is. Okay. We'd be happy to provide that.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. None? All right. Do you want to continue on some presentation that you have, or are you done?
We are done.
You are done. All right. And if any more, no more questions, then thank you very much for your presentation.
You.
Appreciate it. And the meeting is adjourned.
Would you like to invite Ken Armstrong?